So today on Legal Listen, your host, Catherine Fuller, that's me, and Lynn McGrath, are from BLG's Investment Management Group, will explore the key findings from a First in Canada survey by BLG on ESG perceptions and practices of Canadian fund managers. Using this information, you'll be able to benchmark your practices against those of your peers and take away some practical tips on what to do about some of the more challenging areas of ESG. Of course, to talk about your specific situation, you can reach out to us or any of your usual BLG contacts. Links to our contact information is available on the show notes. This podcast is part of BLG's Future of Law series, which captures the perspectives of industry leaders on the biggest issues facing law and business in honor of BLG's 200th anniversary. Check out the show notes for a link to the full series. So Lynn, let's start with a quick recap of the main findings from our ESG survey. What do you think, the people who haven't looked at it yet, are the things they should know?
Well, thanks, Catherine. I think there were some interesting findings when we got the survey results. For example, the extent to which ESG is an important issue for the asset management industry. I mean, our survey showed us that more than 6 in 10 of our survey respondents, Canadian fund managers, consider ESG factors in their investment process. So it's impacting a lot of the industry. Secondly, we also saw the extent of the review by the regulators in this area and how interested the regulators are. Because of those that are, you know, involved in ESG, 6 of 10 also were involved in an OSC sweep. So I think that's really the regulatory agenda in this area is quite strong. And you and I know that for sure, because that kept us quite busy this year. And the final thing that we saw in the survey is just the extent to which that regulatory guidance and the guidance from the sweeps is causing confusion. And the notice that came out is confusing for people. And people are really grappling with how to implement it and deal with it in person, in practice. So we did see that, for example, fewer than 1 in 4 felt like it was just something that was clear already. They did really feel like it was something new, a new regulatory requirement that they hadn't had to deal with before.
I definitely heard a lot of grumblings from clients about that staff notice. And I think that we know that, you know, this is a complex area. And I think the regulators maybe didn't appreciate how complex it was when they came out with that first staff notice. And I think we're hopeful from their experience through the comment process and the prospectuses and through the sweeps that they've done, that maybe they've become a little bit more aware of the complexities in the area. And I know I'm certainly looking forward to seeing what their rewrites of that staff notice is going to look like, because I do think that people are going to be looking for it with great interest.
I agree. It's going to be a lot of interest coming out of that. And it is really too bad that it's just going to be guidance again and not something we'll be able to comment on. Do you know when that might be coming out? What are your predictions on that? Because we have seen a few mixed messages on this.
I agree. I think we should put a bet on it, Lynn. My best bet, I'm going to go with March. And I say that mostly because I know the OSC's year end is the end of March. And I think it's one of their priorities that they staff want to be able to say, done, tick the box.
I won't take that bet.
So things are moving fast. And beyond the challenges of the staff notice itself, I know our clients are just grappling with the pace of change in the ESG area in general. So what have you been seeing, Lynn, in terms of how fund managers are actually responding to all of this?
Well, certainly there's a lot of focus on disclosure at many levels, disclosure in the prospectus documents, disclosure in the continuous disclosure materials. So, for example, we did see in our survey that a majority of our respondents did have to make changes or chose to take another look in light of the guidance on what they were saying in public disclosure and offering documents. And we also saw in the survey results that clients are spending a lot more time considering their marketing materials and ensuring that they are aligned, let's just say at least aligned with the offering documents. Almost half of the survey respondents have changed their sales communications or marketing materials because of either the notice or the sweep or combination of both.
And I think really we can't talk about the survey without talking just about compliance as a whole. So I know that almost half of all the survey respondents believed that their compliance-related costs for ESG was going to go up in the next 5 years. And I think I'm not surprised by that. I think that we all expect that you just need to devote a lot more time and attention to this area because it is new. What I thought was interesting was that a lot of managers are using very manual controls to try to deal with this compliance issue. And I think that's because ESG in its nature is not easily programmed. You can't code, don't own more than 10% of this issuer in the fund. Like, that's not the same way that you can do for some kind of concentration restriction. I think that there are a lot of nuances on why a particular issuer might be held in the portfolio and what the rationale might be for how it fits within your particular ESG approach. And I think that requires a lot of documentation and nuanced conversations. And so if I'm in the compliance group, I think it's hard to figure out how to best demonstrate that you are complying and ensure that you are complying.
Yeah, I agree. And it's also very different from issuer to issuer and also on a time basis, like a time horizon basis. It can change over time in terms of what the priorities are. But it is important to have those compliance objectives. Obviously, the OSC and the regulators are looking for that. But there's also a lot of risk in the area outside of just the regulatory reviews. Things like we've seen class action litigation going on. Obviously, in the U.S. in particular, we have seen all the activities of securities regulators south of the border. And finally, we've seen activity by the Competition Bureau in Canada. So obviously, the compliance costs are essential in this area, for sure, as you mentioned.
So I think you mentioned like three different areas of risk to worry about. What should fund managers be doing to deal with that? Like, what controls seem to be working?
Well, I think the industry is doing a great job so far managing those controls and compliance issues. But obviously, looking at the offering documents, that's something we see. Obviously, examining sales communications and marketing material. Thinking about this whole, we haven't really spoken about it a lot, but characterization of funds. What kind of ESG funds? Are they ESG objective forward funds? Are they more integration type funds, if we use the definitional terms that have just come out from the CFA and others in the industry report? So I think looking at how you're categorizing your funds internally and making sure everything's aligning with that. Continuous disclosure materials like the MRFPs, and client reporting. How are you going to show if you have an impact fund, what kind of impacts you've made, et cetera? And then having, of course, as we've talked about, the compliance policies and procedures to support all of that.
Definitely. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges is how do you demonstrate compliance with what you've said you're doing in those disclosure documents? Because, you know, how do you figure out how can you demonstrate it? How can you automate it? Are there ways to be able to test, or are we still back in a very manual kind of like sampling process that the compliance department is doing? Or are you, you know, stuck with just getting certifications from your portfolio managers that everything in the portfolio is compliant with the objectives? You know, my personal view is that you probably need a more robust demonstration of compliance than you would for other areas that you've been thinking about. I think it's just such a tricky area to be able to answer questions from a regulator or in litigation context to show that you complied.
Right. And I think because of all the risks, another big area to think about is governance, like top-down governance. You know, how is the board going to be satisfied that you've dealt properly with the risks associated with these new products and the types of investment processes you're using and how you're communicating those processes to the public. So I think thinking about governance as well from a larger perspective is really important.
It's that tone from the top.
Tone from the top. That's it.
I mean, I think the other part is training. So, you know, you can have all the guidance coming from the top of the house, but you need the people doing the day-to-day on the ground really understanding this is the risk they should be looking out for. These are the procedures and policies you put in place. And then, you know, trying to make sure that everything you're doing is consistent with that. I know some of the rules around, you know, what you can say in marketing materials seem really granular, but if you haven't got a marketing team that understands what the risk is and what the concern is, then, you're going to set yourself up for a challenge, I think, from a compliance perspective.
And I think one last area that has to be taken into account, and I'm not sure we've seen all the final evolution of how this one's going to play out, but it's proxy voting. And, you know, when your proxy voting is going to be considered to be a pure ESG strategy, or when ESG is going to just follow along with other financial metrics, et cetera, as part of your proxy voting. And also, you know, we've seen a number of comments in the sweeps around stewardship. And, you know, if you say something about your ESG stewardship in your marketing materials, you have to have disclosure in your prospectus. Well, that's new, because that word stewardship never even appears in 81106 or 81101 right now, or the form requirements. So trying to figure out how disclosure of proxy voting and stewardship is going to be aligned in all the materials as well, I think is a challenge, and something that the industry and the regulators in Canada are still working out. Maybe we'll get some thoughts on that in the next iteration of the notice.
For sure. And I think that, you know, it's interesting, because you could have a decision to invest in something that doesn't seem at all ESG compliant, or vote in favor of something that doesn't intuitively seem to work with what your stated goals are. So, you know, I think that the next wave of what's going to happen is the regulator is going to start to look at what the fund is actually holding. They, you know, they've been focused on this disclosure piece about what are you saying, but now they're going to like look at the next level, which is what are you actually doing?
Mm-hmm. Yes, which is tricky, because ESG means different things to different people in some cases.
Exactly. So I think for me, there's a lot of rapidly evolving issues in this area, and I think that there's more challenges to come. So I wanted to say thank you so much for talking about the ESG survey findings from our fund managers and what they can do to reduce their ESG risk.
Well, you're welcome, Catherine. Very nice to do our first podcast together. And for those who listen, thank you very much. And just a reminder that you can find a link to the full survey in the show notes.
And reach out to Lynn or I if you have any specific issues that you want advice on. We're happy to help talk to you about your particular issues and help you navigate this rapidly evolving environment.